I'm sure you recognize that as Flight of the Bumblebees. World travel with a theme isn't a new idea. Tourists often plan their trips around wine, architecture, history, that sort of thing. But honey tourism? Maybe that's a new idea. Grace Pundick went around the world to Yemen, Australia, Russia, and China in pursuit of honey and the bees that make it. Her book, The Honey Trail in Pursuit of Liquid Gold and Vanishing Bees, considers honey in an era of bees' unexplained death and globalization's aggressive spread. It's published by St. Martin's Press, and I'm pleased that it brings Grace from her home in Tasmania to our studio today. Welcome, Grace.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're an Australian, as it doesn't take much to tell from listening to you. How'd you get so interested in honey?
Well, I first tried Yemeni honey when I lived in Kuwait in the late 90s. And after that, I found it was such an amazing experience that I found that wherever I travelled, I started sourcing local honey. And I found that it actually told me a lot about a place. So not just about, you know, the plants there, but also a geography, a climate, a history, a culture. There was so much that you could learn from honey. And since writing the book, I still, wherever I go, I source local honey. It's such a fantastic way of getting into a place.
The title of the book is The Honey Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Is there such a thing, other than the title of your book, as The Honey Trail?
You can go anywhere in the world and find a honey trail. That's the beauty of honey. And I could still be writing stories about honey. There were 10 countries that I travelled through for this particular book, and I looked at a specific angle in each chapter. So each chapter is about a different country. And I chose those countries for specific, you know, subjects, I guess. Yemen, I looked at terrorism and honey, as well as the importance and significance of honey in the Quran and in Islam. In Borneo, I looked at the problem with encroaching palm oil plantations and deforestation, plus also the non-government organisations that are working with local indigenous communities to promote honey. So each US chapter, I looked at the problem with disappearing bees, as well as did a bit of a honey blues trip. I travelled through Mississippi, which was fantastic. I love Mississippi. So I was quite specific. But, there were certain countries I didn't go to that were that I could easily find other stories as well.
Is honey different in some profound way as a commodity from other commodities that have been traded for thousands of years as well? I'm thinking of wine or spices. How is honey different?
Well, I don't think it's been given, well, especially in the New World, I don't think it's been given the kudos that it deserves. It's ancient food produced by bees, you know, humankind has been collecting from time immemorial. So in that way, I think it's different in that, before wine was produced, there was honey. Do you know, the people, I think the oldest caves that were drawings that have been found are in Spain. I can't remember exactly how old they are, but that was when people were climbing up cliff faces to just collect wild honey that bees were producing, and they had their hives in rock, holes in rocks.
Where's the most honey produced?
China's the largest honey producer in the world, and they have got great hopes of dominating the honey market.
A surprise.
Yeah.
It's just like when we're talking to Ken Rogoff, China's going to run the world.
Including
now, it appears, the honey trail.
They do, and they already do, but what's interesting is that they've had to address a whole lot of issues. They had their honey banned in the EU and also in Australia and the United States because their honey contained chloramphenicol, which is an antibiotic that's banned for human consumption. And so they've had to address that. But before they started addressing that, they actually started this honey smuggling racket. So their honey would appear as a product of Vietnam, a product of Moldavia, a product of Australia even. And then in trying to
olive oil also has that problem.
Is that right?
They mislabel.
They mislabel. Yeah, doesn't surprise me at all. It's incredible what we do, you know, all for to turn a profit.
And obviously one of the big themes of your book, The Honey Trail, is globalization. Mm-hmm. How has globalization changed the honey business?
I think a lot of the honey that we buy, I think it's changing now in some places, but a lot of the honey we buy is blended, often imported honey. We have no, we just assume that it's pure and that it's honey and it's clean and it must be good for us. But there's such a huge import market in the States, for example, in the EU, for example, honey is imported and it's blended by the large packers, unless you buy it from your local beekeeper. And I think that's one issue that people need to be aware of.
And when you say blended, mm-hmm. blended, when the, you know, in my naivete, I'm embarrassed to say probably the plastic bear of honey. I know it's very bad. What is in there? What am I eating?
Well, hopefully you're eating honey.
One hopes, yes.
But you know, there's a whole lot of issues with labeling of foodstuffs. I know in the United States it's become a bit difficult to determine exactly what is being imported into the country as honey. So sometimes to avoid certain tariffs, honey packers or producers will import honey and then say that it's not honey. All right, and then I think it's like it's baker's grade or it's something like that, and then they can avoid certain tariffs. But then does that mean it's not honey? And so, you know, they can't say
that
it's honey.
But I mean just chemically. What, if it's not pure honey, what else is in there?
Well, sugar syrup. I know in India a few years ago they were making analog honey, which was sugar syrup blended to actually resemble honey. But you've just got to be careful. So even if it is honey, the fact that it comes from so many different countries and it's blended, you don't really know exactly where it's come from. It's a blend of a whole lot of different flowers. It's a real mishmash of things. You don't know, you know, how clean it is. There's a whole lot of issues.
I'm talking with Grace Pundick, whose book, The Honey Trail, In Pursuit of Liquid Gold and Vanishing Bees, is published this month by St. Martin's Press. So where was the best honey you tasted?
Oh, difficult question. I'd have to say Yemen. That honey was amazing, is amazing. Some of the Russian honey I tried was pretty fantastic as well. I like a dark, complex honey. That's the lighter honeys don't really do it for me. So the darker honeys, the buckwheat, the chestnut honey is really yummy.
Now, when you say chestnut honey, what does that mean? Is it mixed with something?
No, it's made. The bees have collected their nectar from the chestnut flower.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that's wonderful about your book is the photographs, which I think you took yourself.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And there's a beautiful picture in Yemen of a man sitting in a food stall with a honey cake, sort of like a tart or a cake in front of him. Do you find that each country uses honey differently or more similarly to one another?
Very much differently. In Yemen, and throughout the Middle East, honey is revered. So, you know, at a birth of a child or a wedding, it's given as a gift. In Borneo, for example, they don't use it to eat just generally. They use it as a medicine. In China, they'll drink it with hot water first thing in the morning. They don't put it on their toast. So, you know, like in Australia and the US, we cook with it and we put it on our toast and on our bread, et cetera, et cetera. So very, very different.
Here in the United States, I think to the extent anyone knows anything about bees, they know about CCD, the colony collapse disorder. Why don't you start by telling us what is the CCD, the colony collapse disorder?
Okay, so the bees are looking fine. The colony of the hive itself is going really, really well. There seems to be lots of honey being produced and they're active. And then one day they just up and disappear. So, and it becomes the hive is dead. So, and no one really knows what it is exactly. I suspect it's a combination of things just from my research. You know, I'm not a scientist. I'm a writer that's traveled the world researching honey. I suspect it's a combination of things.
But this is something that has happened on a vast scale, hasn't mm-hmm. it? I mean, talk about how many bees are just gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at, especially in the United States, the amount of pesticides are being sprayed, the issue with GM crops, you know, now you've got your Roundup Ready canola, so that's sort of being planted with already an insecticide installed in the seed. You're looking at the the scale that with which bees are being used for pollination, say, for example, in California on the almond crops, well, you've got to think, well, you know, maybe it's a combination of those plus the issue with the varroa mite, which is...
No, I'm not familiar with the situation with the varroa, whatever mite that was.
It's
what is that?
It's a nasty little beast that attaches itself to the bee, to the back of the bee, and then it works its way into the comb, into the cell, and then it attaches itself to the egg, to the brood of the bee, and it just spreads and spreads and spreads. So bees actually get viruses, and some bees' colonies can live with certain viruses, just like we do, and some viruses attack them. So I suspect that with the varroa mite, that's actually spreading lots of different viruses. So, you know, they're really struggling at the moment, the poor little things.
What's a queen bee?
Oh, she is the queen bee.
I know. It's more than a metaphor. It's an actual thing,
that's
right?
That's right. Yes. The mother of the hive. Yeah.
And what's involved in being a queen bee?
Well, she lays the eggs.
Oh.
Basically, she's the one. Without a queen, there's basically no hive. A hive needs a queen to survive. And everything
how many bees in a hive?
Oh, my God. Thousands and thousands and thousands.
There are thousands and just one queen?
Yes.
And how does one get to be the queen?
Well, you can. Some of the worker bees. So you've got worker bees who are female, and then the drones are the ones that the mate that mate with the queen, and they're male, but they die. If they get lucky and get to mate with the queen, then they're dead.
They better enjoy it while they can.
Not really a happy ending.
Right.
Sometimes if you don't install a queen itself, so you can get a queen from people produce queens, and then you put the queen in there. If the queen dies and then the colony is without a queen bee, sometimes a worker will make herself into a queen, but it's not always successful. She might lay lots of drone eggs, and so therefore the hive will eventually weaken because there's no queen, and it's full of male bees, which is they're really ineffective, unfortunately.
And yes. how long do bees live? How long does a queen bee live?
I think a queen bee can live up to 3 to 5 years. But I was speaking with a beekeeper in Denver in Colorado where I was last week, and she was saying that they're finding their queen bees aren't living that long anymore, like 1 to 2 years, that they're actually a lot weaker, which is a bit of a worry.
And how much honey does a single bee produce in a lifetime?
I believe they produce about a teaspoonful, but I have also read that they can produce a tablespoonful.
Well, so, I guess that would spread out over thousands of bees. That would be quite a difference, I guess.
It is. And a bee will only live around about eight weeks.
Another thing that's very striking about your book is this: the difference in how honey is made in each community. Again, even in the photographs, you can see that a Chinese beekeeping is very different from Russian beekeeping, which is very different from Yemeni. What is your favorite way of honey being produced?
Well, now that I am a beekeeper, I wasn't a beekeeper when I started this journey. It was only after I wrote the book that I started keeping bees. And for the ease of extracting honey and looking at the bees, the Langstroth hive, which is just your regular hives that, you know, the box hives that you see, for me is much easier. But traveling around, I would have to say I loved the log hives that were in Yemen and also the basket hives. I came across an older gentleman in the southeast of Turkey in a really remote area who kept he made hives made of basket. He wove his own hives.
A caller asks if there are any good websites for getting pure honey or places in the New York area where you can buy really good honey.
I gave a talk at the New York City Beekeepers a couple of nights ago, and I think they're a fantastic bunch of people.
Now, are these people who keep bees in New York City?
Mm-hmm. I think only a few months ago it was actually made legal.
What a joy to be their neighbor. Is it legal to keep bees in New York City?
It is now. It wasn't until a few months ago. And now I think all over the city there are beehives on rooftops.
Oh, really?
And a lot of people, and I even noticed walking here to the studio, looking up, if you look up in New York, you'll see a lot of rooftop gardens. So the beekeepers are accessing that. I know that in Union Square, I think there's a farmer's market. If you go to the local farmer's markets, you can buy some great New York honey. And this is being produced by local beekeepers. And I can't stress enough the importance of buying local honey.
That's a great thing to do. I didn't realize that New York City you can keep bees now. Does it have to be outdoors, or can you keep bees in your apartment?
You wouldn't want to do that, Jeff.
Well, remember that guy, you don't live here, but there was a great story a few years ago about a guy who had a tiger in his apartment. And it was not a good situation. Is there such a thing as urban honey that you've seen?
Yeah, and in fact, studies have shown. I used to keep bees when I first started. In my hometown of Hobart in Tasmania. Tasmania's at the end of the world, in case you don't know.
Where is Tasmania?
Tasmania is the southern. It's an island off the mainland of Australia, and it's Australia's most southern state. So, and I say it's at the end of the world, cause it is.
Is there such a thing as a Tasmanian devil?
Oh yeah.
Is it? I'm not just a cartoon character.
It's not, but it does sound like the cartoon character.
I see.
Yeah, it does sound like that.
Now, you brought me a gift.
I did.
Can you describe for our listeners this fabulous gift, which I am delighted to accept?
Thank you. This is honey from Bruny Island, and Bruny Island is a very, very, very special island off the coast of the island of Tasmania, and that's where I keep my hives. I only have four hives, and it's a really pristine area, pristine environment, very coastal. It's only a small island. So I think that honey, I don't know exactly what the plants are, but I think I'm just calling it coastal heath honey. So the hives are really quite close to the ocean. And it's I can't look up Bruny Island on the internet just to see if you can see images of it, because it is really beautiful.
Fantastic. Well, I certainly look forward to tasting this honey. And I want to thank Grace Pundick for coming here. She's the author of The Honey Trail, In Pursuit of Liquid Gold and Vanishing Bees, which is published this month by St. Martin's Press. Grace, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me on the show, Jeff.